This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You are listening to Over and Back's Basketball Mysteries of the 1970s. Today's mystery is, was Kareem versus Walton the lost rivalry? All right, we are back. I am Jason. With me as usual is Rich, and we are talking about the rivalry between Kareem Abdul-Jabbar versus Bill Walton. And could they have saved the NBA from the late 70s malaise if things had turned out differently?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because, you know, and we'll get into more details here in a little bit about, you know, the games between them and of course, different injuries got in the way and different, you know, other things got in the way. But you look at it and on paper, it seems like it should have been that sort of, you know, you had your Russell Wilt, you have, you know, in the 80s, of course, you have Magic Bird, and the optics wise, this is very similar to that Magic Bird. But we'll talk about a little bit of stuff that kind of got in the way and different things. But yeah, it's both on the court and off the court as well. But yeah, ideally in a vacuum, yes, this probably could have saved the NBA from the malaise. But these people, who they were, the teams they played for, and you know how their careers went, you know, it did get in the way. But yeah, it's a really interesting question to ask, though.
Yeah, and of course they were both, you know, great UCLA stars who were part of college basketball's greatest dynasty, the two greatest big men of their day. Coach John Wooden called Walton the greatest center in UCLA history after he graduated, which gave Kareem some extra motivation, it sounded like, from the accounts. Walton, meanwhile, has called Kareem the greatest player he'd ever played against and the greatest big man ever. His quote is, "Everything I did was to try to beat this guy. I lived to play against him, and I played my best ball against him. No matter what I threw at them, though, it seemed like he scored 50 against me. His left leg belonged to the Smithsonian, and it wasn't just offense. He was a great defender and rebounder, a great passer, a wonderful leader. He was phenomenal." You know, it's interesting because Walton gets praised so much for just being a, you know, this transcendent revolutionary player. We talked about it in a previous episode, you know, looking at Walton, looking at all the facets of his game. But I feel like Kareem, he gets credit for, you know, his great scoring, the skyhook, and for winning, but he doesn't really get credit as much for being a cerebral player. I mean, he's considered smart, but he doesn't really get that, you know, that sense of being that level of basketball genius, despite his brilliance as a player. And I wonder if it's a racial thing or if it's just more of a belief that Walton, you know, kind of following that Russell template of leading the team through passing and defense, where Kareem is more of a, you know, ball dominant scorer in the Wilt mold, or if it's maybe a combination of both.
Yeah, it probably is a little bit of both. I mean, we always see that. We see it even today where you have, you know, a lot of white players are considered, you know, the thinking man's player and this sort of stuff and the grinder and the hustler. And then like Kareem is like, well, he's got physical gifts. He should score 40 points a game. You know what I mean? Like we always, that still goes on today, even where it's like, well, yeah, of course, if I was 7'1" and, you know, I was great, I would do that too. And it's like, well, there's still, I mean, you still, a lot of guys that are 7'1" that aren't, you know, as good as Kareem or whatever. So there's always that as well. But, and we've talked about it as well, that really a lot of the narrative probably would have changed with Kareem if he had gotten that one more title, you know, with the Bucks, or had gotten, you know, that one more title in the 70s, that might have been able to do a lot more for kind of his, you know, how people think of him and where he's ranked all time. And because, you know, you kind of look at him and you look at a guy who in the first, you know, part of this the decade was, you know, just dominant. And then little by little, as he kind of grew discontent with Milwaukee, the team wasn't as successful. Then he goes to L.A. and, you know, they're not immediately a powerhouse. So you get that weirdness there where people kind of question, you know, what's going on. But what's interesting, too, is you get people that question, you know, whether he was devoted on the court and whether, you know, off court issues were, you know, got in the way. But as we talked about with Bill Walton, I mean, there wasn't a guy in the world who had, like, you know, more, you know, desire to worry about the off court stuff than Bill Walton as well. Even though he was obsessed with the game, he also cared about his off the court stuff too. So I think it's a little combination of both where, yeah, it's a racial. And I think it's also just that, yeah, you have a guy that's a scoring ball dominant guy, and then a guy that the offense runs through, but also facilitates in other ways, where people will always sort of think of one as the smarter player and the other is just, you know, a physically gifted player, which isn't really fair on either end.
Yeah, but they both are very much, you know, two sides of the same coin. I mean, they're both complicated personalities. They both deal with obstacles in the late 70s. Walton famously dealing with injuries that only gave, you know, us a hint of what he could become. There's a feeling with Kareem, which has been expressed by Bob Ryan and others, that Kareem didn't really give the most during his late 70s years, that, you know, he was great, but just didn't seem to have that desire. And whether that's just people reading into things or whether that's a genuine, you know, Kareem didn't quite have his heart in it in the late 70s, it's hard to know. Sometimes his teams under Jerry West, who was the coach of the team during the late 70s, were seen as one dimensional. But it's interesting, we'll get into it in the 77 season, looking at the playoff head-to-head matchup, that the Lakers actually had the better season that year, regular season. They had more wins. It looked like it was definitely Kareem's best opportunity to win a championship between him joining the Lakers and between, you know, Magic coming along in 1980, which changed, of course, the course of the franchise in NBA history.
Of course, yeah.
So, you know, if you look at kind of the head-to-head battles, they only had 11 games in the regular season in which they had the opportunity to have head-to-head battles during their, during really, you know, their primes. It'd be before, you know, what Walton had to, you know, basically go away for four seasons because of injuries.
Yes, this is 75 and 78. This is, of course, those 11 games. Here's the regular season stats. Kareem had 31.9 points per game to Walton's 19.1. Kareem had 12.6 rebounds per game to Walton's 15.4. Kareem had 4.2 assists per game. Walton had 5.9 assists per game. Kareem shot 53% from the field. Walton 44.8. And then Kareem was 57.1 true shooting percentage, whereas Walton was a 48.7 true shooting. Walton's team had the 6-5 edge in wins. But, you know, Kareem was dominant initially. Walton kind of caught up then a little bit after that. But yeah, it's still kind of interesting to see that kind of overlay between the two. And there's some exciting games throughout that as well. A few that really kind of stick out in my mind is January 1975. Bucks won 22, the Blazers 108. Kareem got a 50-point triple-double for the sixth and last time in NBA history, a game we talked about a little bit earlier. And We mentioned her in another episode, and then Walton was injured for all of the other three Bucks Blazers games that season in 1975. But still, just a really impressive performance. Got Kareem 50 points, 15 rebounds, 11 assists, 3 blocks, 1 steal, whereas Walton was held to just 7.6 rebounds, 7 assists, and 1 steal with the Bucks, you know, winning there. Then, you know, a few other games that kind of stand out as well. Their most exciting battle is probably December 1976. The Lakers win 115 to 111. Kareem has 32 points, 16 rebounds, 4 assists, 7 blocks. He has 6 points in the overtime victory as well. Then Walton kind of, you know, next to him has 28 points, 26 rebounds, 3 assists. So I would say probably their closest and best battle, at least the teams. Like, it's a perfect confluence of both teams being really close, the game going to overtime, and both players really delivering. Because we do see a lot of instances where they don't necessarily do that. Like 1977, their final regular season game. The Blazers won 145 over the Lakers 116. Kareem has 8.7 rebounds, 1 assist, and plays only 23 minutes the last game of the season, whereas Walton has 19.16 rebounds and 7 assists. So the Blazers destroy him. Kareem doesn't really do a whole lot. So that tended to be a little bit more of what we saw between the two in the regular season. So it was very few times where they both teams, you know, both team and individually wise had a really great, you know, a really great game, a really great performance. Otherwise, it tends to be a lot more of kind of one-sided, either, you know, the team or the individual.
Yeah, and the last head-to-head matchup in their primes was December 23rd, 77. The Blazers won 108-98, and Kareem had 27 points, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 blocks. Walton, 19 points, 14 rebounds, 3 assists. A, you know, fairly even performance between the both of them. Obviously, the Blazers, that was the 50-10 year where they were looking like they were a championship contender. The Lakers had just, Kareem had recently come back from punching Ken Benson and breaking his hand, and he was out for 20 or so games. And then this was just a couple weeks after the Kermit Washington Rui Tomjanovich fight, and so they were in turmoil, you know, where the Blazers were going very well. So there's obviously some extenuating circumstances there, and there were no more head-to-head matchups during that season, and only one for the next four seasons, because Walton sits out 79 with a foot injury and then only played 14 games in 1980 before missing 81 and 82. And then in that game in 80, Kareem had 28 points and Walton only had 10. And I think was on a minutes restriction during that time, you know, which he barely played that season. However, the Blazers definitely got the best of the Western Conference Finals, where they matched up head-to-head, their only playoff series during the time. As we mentioned before, Kermit Washington, their second-best player, missed this series due to injury. Lucius Allen was probably their third-best player, was playing through pain and only played in two games of the series. So really not necessarily a fair fight individually, but the Blazers or team-wise, but the Blazers were able to win 4-0. Kareem, however, you know, you look at the numbers and, you know, the numbers only tell you a certain amount, but they're interesting, where Kareem 30.3 points per game, 16 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 3.8 blocks per game on 61% shooting. Walton, 19.3 points, 14.8 rebounds, 5.8 assists, and 2.3 blocks on 50% shooting. True shooting percentage, a huge difference. 66% for Abdul-Jabbar and 51.7% for Walton. So I'm not saying that Kareem necessarily outplayed him, because obviously, the other than game one, the series was fairly close, you know, in terms of results. But it's hard to say, you know, one in the head-to-head matchup that one player outplayed another significantly, you know, when you have such a dominant, you know, 4-0 sweep. But it's interesting how the myth of this game is sort of proving Walton as the supreme player at their peaks. At least when you look at the numbers, that there's some question to that in my mind. For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Kareem's awesome,
right?
So, but it seemed like there was a hunger to anoint a new big man superstar or whatever. So it's interesting, and it goes a lot with the. But we'll talk about it here in a little bit. But it's very interesting, because culturally, you know, Walton's not really a better, like, you know, I could see the idea of, oh man, we want to get this, you know, he's black and he's a revolutionary and he's got strong thoughts, and it's like, well, Bill Walton's kind of just happens to be white, but otherwise he's also a revolutionary with, you know. But I guess with the 70s, you had one or two choices with a lot of these guys, but. It's very fascinating, though, this idea and the narrative around this series, when it's really like Kareem really held his own. Like,
yeah. And Kareem very much said the same thing later on in 1980 SI article, where he said, you know, we're playing more or less with four guards and me. Everything written said that Walton had played me. Walton, he played a great series. I played a great series. The Trailblazers played a great series. The Lakers played a poor one. The press tried to make it seem like I was embarrassed. Walton made one dunk shot on me, and that was supposed to have signaled the end of Abdul-Jabbar being the best. And obviously, you know, 1980, it was clear that Kareem was still, you know, if not the best, very close to the best.
And would be pretty good for another decade or so.
Yeah, yeah.
Or nearly a decade.
Right,
so.
Exactly.
It's interesting. So comparing overall stats, 1975 to 78 between the two. Here's Walton's stats. We'll start out with Walton, and then kind of I'll mention as well the ones where he was better than Kareem, and then we'll kind of go with both. But Walton was 17.1 points per game, 13.5 rebounds per game, 4.4 assists per game. He was bested. He bested Kareem in that one steal per game, 2.6 blocks per game, 3.6 turnovers per game, 22.1 PER, 20.7 rebound percentage. So he was over Kareem on that one. 19.3 assist percentage. He was above Kareem on that one. 24.5 usage rate, 26 win shares, 0.178 win shares per 48, 6.0 box plus minus, and then a 14.2 value over replacement player. But as you mentioned, or as you kind of note there, you know, 4.4 assists per game, you know, 20.7 rebound percentage, and then 19.3 assists per game. That's it. That's the only ones where he bests Kareem. Kareem bests him in points per game, rebounds per game, steals per game, blocks per game. PR, you know, usage rates, win shares per 48, box plus minus, fail to replace a player. So, I mean, really, when you take those two, Kareem is better, you know, pretty much all around. And Kareem was the MVP in 1976 and 77, and then Walton was the MVP in 1978. So not really necessarily trying to slight Walton, but Kareem was very good as well. So it wasn't the end of Kareem in that matchup there. Also, if you compare those 1978 seasons, that's the one where Walton won the MVP between Walton and Jabbar. We're using HBox, which is Justin Willard at Nylon Calculus. Did a really great job of this, and you can find it easily if you just look up Introducing HBox on Nylon Calculus. You can get the whole article there. But the 1976 season, the rating, really, you look at it, so Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had a 6.85. Bill Walton had a 7.67. Then you do your value, which is essentially rating, then kind of takes into account minutes per game. And there's some extra goring math if you want to get into it. But essentially, the value, which is the rating times minutes per game divided by 3,000, has Kareem as a better per minute guy at 5.17, whereas Bill Walton was a 4.93. So very close again. Bill Walton gets the MVP that year, but you can argue, you know, using that metric and using a few others, that Kareem was better that season and probably deserved to win his third straight MVP. But of course, that's not always how it works. And even today, we still see that where the guys who are better stories will win the MVPs, or the guys that haven't won recently, people get kind of bored with voting the same guy as MVP, so they like kind of a flashy, sexy story. But it's not like Bill Walton wasn't deserving as well. He was absolutely deserving, but you could definitely make a case that Kareem should have won that one as well.
Yeah, and you know, and of course this, you know, it begs the question, if Walton had stayed heavy, you know, could their rivalry have paralleled Wilt versus Russell, been the kind of thing that carried the NBA through its malaise in the late 70s? I mean, obviously, you know, the Blazers were a young, stacked team that looked like they had a chance to be a dynasty. Now, it's not necessarily the case that things would have, you know, gone the same for the Lakers, but, you know, the Blazers of, you know, still in theory could have been a thriving team in the early 80s. And, you know, if Magic goes to Lakers and that all kind of shakes out in the same way, that's a really interesting what if, to have a strong team that theoretically could have rivaled the Lakers for dominance and be kind of the Western Conference version of the Sixers and the Celtics battling, you know, every year in really tough series. It would be kind of that Western Conference counterpart. And I'm sure that, you know, the Blazers would have theoretically, you know, triumphed in some of those situations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's some other aspects of this as well that, you know, people have pointed out, of course, the white versus black thing, at least, you know, you can think of it as somewhat of a Bird Magic. But the big difference is being, and I mentioned this a little bit before, that both Walton and Kareem were very complicated figures. They did not like the media. They were very revolutionary in their time. Like, so there, you wonder again, like in a vacuum, yes, you look at these two men and you go, oh, that's perfect. You got this big man rivalry. One's black, one's white. So it could have been very much like Bird Magic. But the real appeal of Bird Magic is those guys were very, you know, very personable, very open. You know, Magic especially was just a guy that people just loved to love, whereas Kareem and Walton, yeah, not so much. Yeah. Like, people liked Walton a lot, but Kareem, you know, still, even, you know, it's well known that, of course, he was just not well loved in the 70s by really, you know, by the media, by some of his teammates, just in general. Like, he was just a tough guy to get along with. So it really hurts in like a pure marketing standpoint. If you look at it that way, yes, in a vacuum, you look at those two players, you look at how good they were, you look at what positions they played, you could say, oh yeah, that'd be a perfect marketing ploy, because it worked exactly with Bird and Magic. But I mean, there's so much more complicated stuff there with that. So that's one thing where you look at, I think on court, like you mentioned, I think that absolutely could have been a thing. But I always do wonder if the marketing just would have never been there with those two, just because they weren't figures that you could really get behind in terms of, you know, commercial appeal in that same sense.
Yeah. Going back to the stats real quick, one thing that jumped out at me is the fact that Walton, he did lead in assists per game. It was 4.4 versus 4.3. So, and I know that obviously assists per game don't tell the story, and there's always the pass that leads to the pass, and obviously the Blazers were a team that was more facilitating the offense through Walton and moving the ball a lot, and everyone was moving, where the Lakers were more of a team that was, you know, pounding the ball into Kareem and, you know, trying to get the ball to him and using up a bunch of shot clock, and, you know, Kareem probably getting more of his assists out of, you know, end of clock situations of, you know, okay, passing the guy the ball if he's open, or just, you know, hoping to get somebody else can create a shot if it's not working for Russell. So those are very different ways to create offense, but it is interesting to see that, you know, the assists and even the assist percentage, not that big of a disparity in favor of Walton, given that passing is supposed to be such a significant strength for him over Kareem.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely fascinating in that sense.
Yeah. I do think there are, as we talked about, I mean, you know, Bird was, even though Bird was very popular, he was a guy who was a little bit standoffish with the media as well. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't necessarily have been the biggest hindrance. And, you know, Kareem did have some endorsements as we've gone through in the past, and Walton, you know, did have some endorsement appeal. So they may have been able to kind of beat that in some sense, even if they was still going to have that complicated relationship with the media. But it's interesting to think about for sure. Looking at the head-to-head stuff is really kind of fascinating to me, as far as the perception of what Walton versus Kareem was versus what it was kind of in reality. I think are, you know, the numbers don't tell us everything, but they do kind of illuminate things a little bit for me. All right, so after we take a break, we're going to have part of a previous record episode looking at Kareem's late 70s years with the Lakers, the ups and downs of that. So hopefully everyone will enjoy that. Find us at harborproxism.com. And also leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcast. So to be continued.
Hi, this is Jason. Before we get to the rest of the show, I'd like to tell you about Fast Break Breakfast. It is a podcast for serious NBA fans that is incredibly not serious. Check out what happens when you get two musicians and a comic who are overeducated, underemployed, but share an obsession about the NBA, 90s movies, and conspiracy theories. So make sure you subscribe to Fast Break Breakfast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Now, we are joined in progress with Rich and I discussing the trade that sent Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from the Bucks to the Lakers in 1975.
One thing I wanted to do is sort of look at the win shares and see who got the better of this trade, Jason. I don't know if it's been decided yet, but I think we right now are going to decide, did the Bucks or the Lakers make out in this Kareem Abdul-Jabbar trade? Anyway, Milwaukee acquired Elmore Smith, guard Brian Winters, and rookie, quote, blue chippers, this is from articles, blue chippers, Dave Myers and Junior Bridgman. So total win shares with Milwaukee for those guys, Smith had 9.5, Winters had 37.5, Myers had 13.4, and then Bridgman had 40.4. So pretty good. I mean, in total, they got 100.9 win shares out of all those guys. Kareem with the Lakers, though, 158.7. So I think... I'm not ready to say Kareem won. I'm not ready to say the Lakers won, but the extra 60 win shares or so were probably not too bad. But no, it was pretty obvious. I think all told, though, out of the trade, I think that the Bucks did pretty well. I mean, a lot of times you look at these, and in modern history now, you get these sort of superstar for a pile of guys trades, and a lot of them are just total wrecks. I mean, where you look at Orlando and Dwight Howard or whatever, and it's just basically like you're just stuck with ineptitude, you know, for years. And the Bucks, it took a little while for them to get sort of back on the wheel, but all told, I think they did kind of okay with this. They weren't a total wreck afterwards. It wasn't like they were winning 10 games a year,
yeah,
you know, for the 5 years afterwards, where you see with modern, you know, Dwight Howard I mentioned, you know, the Nuggets were able to do pretty well without Carmelo, but you know, it doesn't go to, I mean, the now Pelicans, former Hornets or whatever, after Chris Paul had a huge, you know, downturn. It happens to a lot of guys, but in this, the Milwaukee, I think, came out okay. But
yeah, I mean, Winters and Bridgman ended up being, like, you know, pretty good role players for them. Yeah. I mean, they, you know, they weren't stars or anything, but you know, you could definitely have done worse. I think the funny thing is part of that deal, the idea was to get youth behind it, to get guys who would be in the league after Kareem was gone. But like they, Kareem ended up outlasting all of them. Right. So that's,
you know, I mean, they couldn't have known.
Right. Have known. Yeah, but a couple of them were rookies that year. So yeah, nobody knew, obviously. Yeah, I mean, basically there's a lot of good articles that kind of have recapped aspects of it, but there's a really good one from the LA Times in 87, actually Christmas of 87, where basically like kind of completely recaps, you know, how Kareem ended up with the Lakers. And basically, I mean, the first meeting between, you know, Wayne Embry, who was the GM of the Bucks by then, he was the first African-American GM in the league, and, you know, other management with, you know, and also, and Kareem and his representatives basically, actually, I'm not even sure Kareem was at that, but Kareem's representatives were there, and it was basically like, you know, they and said like, hey, he wants to be traded. He wanted to, you know, and according to Embry, he wanted to be traded to New York. Apparently his second preference was Washington, his third preference was LA. Now there's dispute over the different articles whether he really wanted to go to Washington or not. There were limited options, of course. He also had basically the threat of I could go to the ABA if I wanted to and go to the Nets. You know, he'd have to sit out a year, but you know, that wasn't apparently not a huge issue. And it was basically said, you know, there wasn't dissatisfaction with us. He just wanted to be traded from Milwaukee because his lifestyle and the lifestyle there were not compatible. So, and they basically kept it quiet for almost the entire season. I mean, he finally confirmed it in March of 75 and the trade happened in June, although he kind of confirmed it like in vague ways in which it's like, well, you know, like I don't want to get traded, but it wasn't like he demanded a trade. But it, you know, it was sort of like, considering, you know, we hear every rumor now, and we're in a different media environment, of course. It, you know, no star player, Kevin Durant could not, you know, request a trade now, and we wouldn't hear about it for a year. That's almost impossible to believe that.
Right.
I mean, there are obviously some front offices that are better ships than others, but it seems impossible in today's media environment that could possibly happen.
they'd already be talking about it, you know, prior. There'd be 10 Bleacher Report articles on, you know, ways that Kareem can go to whatever team and it's only the big markets or whatever. Yeah, no, no way.
Sure. Although, you know, this is, of course, like the – I mean, it's in a sense maybe the first, you know, time a superstar has asked out of a city and that trade happening. I mean, you know, Wilt was traded, but he's really the only other franchise player who was traded. So anyway, the trade happens. He ends up with the Lakers. They, of course, you know, having traded four players, you know, young players, they're kind of in a rebuilding situation a little bit anyway, coming out of the, you know, West is retired, of course. Chamberlain is retired. So they're kind of rebuilding. They do still have Gail Goodrich, but he's 32 at this point. So he's older. Lucius Allen is there, of course, Kareem's teammate in his third stop now. But there isn't really a whole lot of, you know, other than that, those are the only three above average players. They have Cazzy Russell, who's 31, who's, you know, a decent role player, but getting older, obviously. And they have a young Kermit Washington who hasn't really figured things out yet. They also have a 30-year-old Pat Riley who plays 23 minutes and has a 7.4 PER. So, so that's always fun. I forgot that Pat and Kareem actually played together.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that. Yeah.
I mean, I knew they played, you know, at the same time, but I didn't know they actually played on the Lakers together. So, now they actually finish 40-42 and miss the playoffs, and the Bucks finish 38-44 and they make the playoffs because they won their division. So, so that's kind of funny. Yeah, sort of a strange year.
That wins your division. Not only to sneak in because like there's not enough playoff teams. No, they won their division with that record. That's
right.
Unbelievable.
You know, and it's kind of odd because, you know, this year, you know, kind of the previous year and through the end of his Lakers tenure, I mean, he has the least amount of team success despite being ages 27 to 31.
Yeah.
Like his career path did not follow, you know, kind of what you expect. I mean, he I wouldn't say peaked, but he had so much success so early and just these unbelievable seasons. He's winning all these MVPs. I mean, we haven't even like really like mentioned like the fact that like, hey, he won three MVPs.
Oh, yeah, he was racking up MVPs during all
the
time.
He won three MVPs in 5 years. He won MVPs in 71, 72, 74, in 76 this season. He would win it in 76 as well. So would win it the following year in 77 and then would win it in 1980, which is his sixth MVP. So obviously incredible. He's having these incredible individual seasons and he bounces back, you know, on a, you know, just a production level after, like we mentioned, slightly being down, you know, from previous seasons. Leads the league in rebounding as well. So is just, you know, doing tremendous things as you would expect. He also starts doing yoga this year in 76 to, you know, improve his flexibility. Says there's no way he could have played as long as he did without yoga. Basically, was a pioneer in terms of like his diet and yoga to have flexibility and weight training, you know, was ahead of the curve on that level as well, which of course is one of the reasons why he was able to play for so long.
Certainly. Yeah. You hear about that for a lot of guys. I wonder, it's always weird how nobody just immediately just, I mean, you hear like LeBron will mention that he does it now or he does it recently. I wish the guys just start doing yoga, right? Like, just get ahead of the game and start doing yoga. Yes. It's always, guys always figure it out like later in their life or like halfway through. It's like, you know, just start doing it now.
Well, in the 70s, it's a little more understandable, but.
No, I get that. No, yeah. I get Kareem. Yeah, that one was, and I'm sure he enjoyed it. That's Kareem in mid 70s prime right there with the yoga. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
So in 76 and 77, they actually improved. They finished 53-29. Jerry West becomes their coach, and he's only their coach because of a lawsuit. He and the team were embroiled in some legal action because, you know, West retired, but I guess he had some he still had some years on his contract, and he wrote about it in his book, which is really interesting and good. And they basically, you know, he and the team owner, who was Jack Kent Cook at the time, who also owned the Redskins and was, you know, famous rich guy, they ended up coming to terms on a lawsuit settlement. And he's like, yeah, well, you're gonna be our coach, essentially, I guess, to sort of fulfill that contract. but they end up 53-29. They actually end, which is unbelievably, 53-29 is the best record in the NBA that year. Like, we, you know, as we mentioned, sort of the parody, this is the 76-77 season. But they're, you know, in terms of simple ratings, they're like sixth in the league. So that, you know, so it's not quite as impressive as it looks, although, you know, obviously having the best record in the league is still pretty good. And there's a SI article about like how basically they come together, basically everyone's bafflement. And I love the quotes of Jerry West as a coach, you know. Heck, when I played, we never ran any plays, says West. I didn't know anything. And Kareem talks about like, oh, he's happy again. Winning makes me happy. It's what made Milwaukee tolerable. So, They play well. They play the Blazers very well that year during the regular season. The Blazers, this is, of course, the famous 77 championship Blazers team, and they end up sweeping the Lakers in the playoffs.
Sort of disappointing. You know, we just talked about how it's very weird how, you know, during his prime years, he's not getting success. But when, you know, he's 22 and 21, he's, you know, just showered with success. Very interesting, but it's good to see them sort of get back on this right path and see him sort of take back the reins as being, you know, one of the better, you know, or the best player in the league at that point.
Right. Exactly. So, in the 78 season, they are 43-37, which is basically the seventh best record in the NBA. And Kareem injures himself in the first game of the season when he breaks his hand after punching Kent Benson, who played for Milwaukee, was the first pick in the draft. He played for Indiana and was, I believe that was the year that Indiana had gone undefeated. So he was like, you know, a big college star is the point, you know. And he had elbowed Kareem in the stomach, and then Kareem just like, you know, doubled over and then recovered and then just knocked.
Have you watched the video? You watched the video of it recently?
Yeah.
He gets a nice shot in too.
Yeah, I mean, he knocks him down. I mean, that's a heck of a one. So,
and they have a picture. I don't know if you've seen it on Google too, of the picture of him. You know, the post. He's all swollen and he gets a good shot.
Absolutely, and so he's out for 2 months. Didn't actually get suspended. He missed 20 games. It's his only year that he was not picked as an all-star. You know, and there's definitely a pretty big backlash against him. This is during a time in which the NBA, you know, there's the drug issues. There's a lot of fighting going on. Basketball did not become the sport of the 70s, although it did. Eventually, those promises kind of came true by the mid 80s, but just took longer than everyone expected. The people expected it to, who were touting it as that. And, you know, it adds some turmoil. And then right after Kareem gets back, 23 games, in fact, there's the infamous Kermit Washington and Rui Tomjanovich fight that is, you know, for that's a whole nother podcast. But basically, you know, Tomjanovich is trying to break up a fight between Washington and Kevin Connor. And then he runs behind Washington. Washington turns around, just hits him with a punch that shatters his face and, you know, threatens his life and his career. And Washington is traded, you know, almost immediately afterward because Kareem says just the idea that they couldn't have him and Kermit together because of just the backlash because of both of them in the fighting and the perception that they both have. So this is kind of like maybe a bottom point for Kareem's perception in term, you know, among the media, maybe some of the fans too. So, so they end up falling in the first round of the Sonics. There's a bunch of, they end up adding Norm Nixon, Lou Hudson, Adrian Dantley, and Jamal Wilkes. Other than Hudson, mostly young guys, you know, kind of building for the future. Hudson, who had been an all-star with the Hawks for most of his career, but sort of as an aging guy. So, you know, like, you know, we sort of said, like, are an okay career, but end up falling to the Sonics, who went to the finals that year. Yes. And then kind of his final year with the Lakers, that we're going to discuss anyway, the 78-79 season, similar record, win 47 games, or tied for sixth in the NBA. They have a similar fate in the postseason, though they end up beating Denver in the first round and falling to the Sonics 4-1 in the second round. The Sonics end up winning the championship that year. So, and there's an article that year of basically the idea of Kareem not being the same since the fight. Although it really, stats wise, he seems fine. They even kind of mentioned that in the article, but the idea is that he doesn't look the same on the court. He looks disinterested. Bill Walton has replaced Kareem as many eyes as the NBA's consummate center. That's going to obviously change soon. And then there was, they talked to a player who, Charlie Scott, who played with the Lakers the year before, basically didn't like West's philosophy. And his quote says, "In LA, we had 22 seconds to get Kareem a skyhook. If we couldn't, we had 2 seconds to try something." Which, you could see that, especially with like Jerry West not being an experienced coach. Like, you could see that the playbook probably wouldn't be that interesting, and you
could just give Kareem the ball. Kareem, good. Right.
Which, obviously, it makes sense to design your offense around Kareem, but, there's obviously limitations to that. And you look at something like with the criticisms that, like, somebody, Scott Brooks has now with, Durant and Westbrook, of just sort of being like a not that interesting dynamic offense, even though it's effective. You could kind of see there being maybe the same thing in this situation.
Sure. Or it's just too easy to give that guy the ball and let him sort of operate in the sense with Durant and Westbrook, where they just, you could totally see that. And you mentioned a little bit in our show notes here about the roster turmoil. Was ridiculous. They had 37 teammates in these first 4 years for Kareem. I mean, just couldn't get anything together, and just a very odd, weird mix of a team that just thankfully, I think things are going to turn around okay for LA. But yeah, in this period, just very odd. And you're seeing, statistically, Kareem is doing just as well or nearly as well as he was prior, but the success just isn't there. And you can see how sort of the narrative would sort of turn on him now, because here's a guy who had so much success in Milwaukee. He demands a trade. He comes here. Now he's punching people. They're not winning. And you can totally see how the tide would sort of turn on him. But as we'll see, unfortunately, or fortunately, rather, things would change for Kareem.
Well, the Lakers' success is unfortunate for you, for your
yes,
your
exactly, fandom, but undying hatred of
it. Right, exactly. But they do sort of build a foundation for the future here, because this year they have Norm Nixon, who's an important player for this team. Jamal Wilkes, of course, who's in his fourth season to come over from the Warriors, who was big. Nixon was in his first season. Adrian Dantley was in his second season. He, of course, wouldn't stick around with the Lakers, but obviously became a great player in the 80s and, had that talent. And they also had Michael Cooper, who didn't play much as a rookie, but, of course, would be an important defensive specialist for the Lakers. So even though, they kind of had a mix of players who were kind of too old or too young around Kareem for the most part during the 70s. But they're building that foundation that they're going to add with Kareem. So
Dantley on the Lakers would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, there was sort of concern about him and Wilkes and Dantley overlapping.
Yeah.
And I mean, Dantley was always kind of like, he had that reputation where, like, individually, like, he seemed like an awesome player, but it was tough to get him to fit with other guys. Mm-hmm. There have sort of been some studies about that too, of just like him, maybe just needing to use too many possessions or whatever, even though he was like tremendously efficient with scoring and the free throw shooting. For whatever reason, it just was, even though he was on some very good Detroit teams and he was on some other good, some good Utah teams too. But yeah, for whatever reason, it just, even though he was a Hall of Famer, it just, maybe it wouldn't have worked, on those Lakers teams because, maybe he wouldn't have been able to fit into that role. It would be, they'd already.
I'm just going to extrapolate Adrian Dantley onto the Lakers.
Sure, there you go.
So there.
The final successful playoff series they have, LA lost the first game to Denver, and Denver kind of got cocky, and Kareem didn't play very well in that first game. He kind of gets outplayed by Dan Issel. But then in game three, he had 29 points on 13 of 19 shooting, 16 rebounds, 8 assists, and 6 block shots in all 48 minutes of the game, and also swatted David Thompson's attempted a game winner. So just has an incredible game there and kind of reminds everybody, even at age 32 or 31 or 32 at that point, he is still, he's still the man. So and then, of course, famously in the to close out the decade, he is in the movie Airplane.
You want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it? Joey, you ever hang around the gymnasium?
We better get back now, Joey.
No, Joey can stay here for a while if you'd like.
Could I? Okay, if you don't get in the way.
Flight 209er to Denver Radio. Climbing to cruise at 42,000. We'll report again over Lincoln. Over and out.
Wait a minute. I know you. You're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You play basketball for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I'm sorry, son, but you must have me confused with someone else. My name is Roger Murdoch. I'm the co-pilot.
You are, Kareem. I've seen you play. My dad's got season tickets.
I think you should go back to your seat now, Joey. Right, Clarence?
Oh, he's not bothering anyone. Let him stay here.
All right, but just remember, my name is Roger Murdoch. I'm an airline pilot.
I think you're the greatest, but my dad says you don't work hard enough on defense. And he says that lots of times you don't even run down court. And that you don't really try, except during the playoffs.
The hell I don't. Listen to you. I've been hearing that crap ever since I was at UCLA. I'm out there busting my buns every night. Tell your old man to drag Walton and Lanier up and down the court for 48 minutes.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the episode. Wanted to give a shout-out to InsideHoops.com, which had a great post looking at the Kareem and Walton head-to-head. We'll put a link in the short notes for anyone who wants to check it out. Also want to tell you about a great new podcast that's part of the HB Network. You know that Nylon Calculus is the place to go for smart but accessible analysis of all things in the NBA. And now there's a new podcast called Nothing But Nylon. Hosted by Kevin Farragut, it is a place where NBA writers and researchers discuss their ideas and talk hoops and analytics. Check it out at nyloncalculus.com and on the Harbor Paroxysm Podcast Network.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.